Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvochim Daf Tzadi Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn our attention to the top of Daf Tzadi Gimel, we notice in the Gemara itself a geometric form, a diamond, one of our series markings. This is also labeled number 4, as you can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. These diamonds, being that this is number 4, represents a series of diamonds that started on the previous Omid. We had entitled them under our Mivneh heading, Questions Regarding the Issue of the Blood of Sacrifices in Different Contexts. The Gemara in general was talking about the splattering of blood and the need to do kibbutz to it. In this case, we have number 4, a topic heading in our outside margin, Nose, number 4, Nitaz al Beged Tome. You can see this in the outside margin, a topic heading, the Nose, where the note that we've written in says, the blood of the sacrifice splattered on a Beged Tome, on an impure Beged, the Psul Dam Uti'inas Kibus Boim Ke'echad. That's a situation where the ruination of the blood and the requirement of Kibus come simultaneously. Ha'im Yesh Din Kibus B'Mikre Kozeh. Does a situation like this warrant necessitate a need for Kibus, for the rinsing out of the garment? In general, the blood that the Torah requires one to rinse out is blood that is fit for sprinkling, fit for offering to enable the sacrifice to be accepted. However, blood that's unfit, it's called eino roi, so there's no requirement of doing kibbutz to it. In this case, the blood became unfit at the very moment that the need for kibbutz set in. So, when the two elements happen simultaneously, which one overrules? The need to do kibbutz or the exemption from doing kibbutz? So the Gemara presents this as a question. What we've done with our markings in the space in the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text where you see the number 4 in a diamond, we have a vertical dashed line. Generally speaking, we would call this a long question marking, and that's what this in fact is. But instead of using a kuf to indicate a question or a shin to indicate a shayla, we've relied upon the knowledge that the diamonds in this particular sugi represent questions, so that itself shows us that we have a long question, and it happens to be the fourth. The question will present itself in an Aleph Odilma Beis fashion. As you can see, a few lines later, there's an Aleph on the fifth, above the fifth line of the Gemara, and the next line after that, Odilma Beis, the two sides of the question. So let's see now inside. Bo Amine Romi Bar Chama Mirav Chisda. Romi Bar Chama asks of Rav Chisda, Nitaz al Beged Tome Mahu. Blood of a korban. We're talking about the blood that one uses for sprinkling on the Mizbeach. It is spattered on the Kohen's clothing. It just so happens that the Beged was Tome. What is the din? Rashi at the top, Nitaz al Beged Tome, Vinitmo benigiosoi boi, and the blood became Tome through its contact with the garment. Mihave dam posel, is that considered unfit blood? Ki'ilu nitmo koidem lochein. And therefore, if we're going to consider it unfit, it would be tantamount to its becoming unfit even beforehand. Velo boi kibus, and It would not require kibbutz, being that it's unfit for sacrificial purposes. On the other hand, it might be that since at the moment that it fell onto the garment, the split second before it had contact with the garment, it was still fit for sacrificial use. And we've described this before, where the rejection of the blood and the need for doing the washing come at once. The Gemara will now elaborate on the on this particular question. Omar Rav Huna Brei Rav Yeshua. Rav Huna, in listening to this question, says, from the fact that the question is asked in this fashion, Shma Mino, should we conclude, Hoysa lo shas hakosher v'nifsala ein domo ton kibus, that which we say that if the blood had a shas hakosher, a time at which it was fit, v'nifsala, and then became unfit, ein domo ton kibus, such blood would not require kibus. Hani mili, are we to say that this is so, that it does not require kibus, boze acharze, that's where the dam first became posel, and then got absorbed. Avol bevas achas, if, however, the psul of the dam happened simultaneously, loy, then we wouldn't say ein domotan kibus, but rather we would say that it does require kibus. Oy domoloshna, or possibly, even where the dam becomes unfit simultaneously with the need for doing kibus, that too would render it unnecessary for kibus. So, in going over the point, the question that Romi Bar Chama raised, the way he raised the question, about the fashion in which he raised the question, the case that he raised, was a case where the dam became pusul simultaneously with its absorption into the garment, which is simultaneous with the need for doing kibbutz. Are we to say, says Rav Huna Rav Yeshua, are we to say that from the fact that he posed the question specifically in that way, leaving an option that maybe in that case there is a requirement of kibbutz, then when is it that we say it would not require kibbutz? That would be only if the dam became posel beforehand, but not simultaneously. On the other hand, it might be that not only where it became unfit before the absorption, but even when it's becoming unfit was simultaneous with its absorption in the garment, as in the case of the Beged Tomei, maybe that too would not require kibbutz. Omar Lei, Rav Chisda answers, and we should note that he answers with a long answer, and that's indicated by the tuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a long vertical dashed line, indicating that all of the lines of Gemara opposite this vertical dashed line are part of the answer. So Rav Chisda answers, Plukto de Rabbi Eliezer, v'rabonon, aliba de Rabba ukedekometaritz abaye. The answer to this particular question about simultaneous becoming unfit and need for kibbutz is found, first of all, the answer is dependent on a machlokas tanoim, as is explained by Abaye's interpretation or response to words of Rabba that we will see later in the Gemara. As we skim ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice with our markings that we've circled Rabba. At the end of the line, you can see the second to last narrow line of Gemara, Rabba's name is circled. And about a third of the way into the wide lines of the Gemara, you'll notice a circled abaye. Structurally, a rabbah presents his analysis of Shitas Reb Elozer that we'll see shortly in the Gemara, and Abaye will be asking on Rabbah's analysis, and Abaye then offering his own explanation. And from all of this discussion, we will then eventually tie it into our issue, our case. The bulk of the Gemara, however, will not be dealing with the blood, with sacrificial blood absorbed into the garment. That, in fact, won't be seen anymore in this piece of Gemara. But rather, the Gemara will be focusing on topics relating to the Mei Pora Aduma. This is the water that was mixed with the ashes of the red cow that are used for purifying people that experienced Tumas Meis, impurity as a result of contact with the dead. And it's our job to go through the Gemara step by step, bearing in mind that later on we will tie it back into the issue of the blood becoming absorbed into the garment and simultaneously becoming rendered unfit. Disanya. We continue the Gemara with a Tanaic source. Reb Elozer Omer, Mei Chatos Shinitmu'u. Mei Chatos is an expression referring to the Pora Aduma waters. Those are the waters that the ashes of the red cow were mixed together with water. These are waters used for being Metayer, a Tomei Meis. And these, in this case, Reb Elozer describes Mei Chatos, the Pora Aduma water, Shenitmu, that became themselves, they became Tomei. He says those waters are still effective, Mitarin. They're effective in being Mitarin, in creating purification. And how does he know that? Sherei Nida Mazin Oleha. We know that a woman who is a Nida, she's in a state of impurity. If this woman happened to also have been in contact with a mace, the halacha is telling us that we will sprinkle the Mei Pora Aduma on this woman who's Tomea, she's Tomei mace, and she also happens to be Tomea Nida. And eventually, when she goes to the mikveh for the immersing cleansing process, her immersion in the mikveh will cleanse her not only from her nida but from the tumas meis that she had as well. What we see from this story is that the sprinkling, and maybe we should say a word or two about the sprinkling of Pora Aduma water on a person who's tumei meis, after the person was in contact with a meis, water is sprinkled on him on the third day and seventh day since his contact with the corpse. After which, the individual immerses himself in a mikveh and thereby achieves purification. In this case, the client happened to be a woman who's a nida, which is another form of tuma. What are we in effect doing? We're sprinkling on a person who's tamei, and the sprinkling is effective insofar as we see that at the end of the seven-day Tumas Meis period, she's able to go to the mikveh and achieve purification from the Tumas Meis and the Tumas Nida. It is obvious to us that when the Mei Pora Aduma comes into contact with the woman who is a Nida, the water is rendered tomei. It becomes unfit, so to speak, or becomes impure. We don't want to use the word unfit because, in fact, it is fit. It's doing the job. The Omar Rabba, continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Elezer, Beshitas Rabbi Kiva Rabboi Omra. Rabbi Elezer here is following the Shita of his Rebbe, his teacher, Rabbi Akiva. The Omar, Rabbi Akiva, has been known to say, Ha'avoras kli al gabi mokoim tomei kemunach domi. the passing, havoras is the carrying or the passing of a vessel containing mei chatos, carrying it over a mokom tome, over an area or an item that itself is tome. Kemunach tome, even though you didn't, it's kemunach tome, it's as if it comes to rest on the tuma, even though in actuality, simply passing the mei pora over the mokom tomei, Rabbi Kiva is saying that it's as if it is placed on the mokom tuma itself. The idea being that all tumos will be metame the mei chatos as the mei chatos passes over their airspace. This nan, we have a Tanaic source. The Tanaic source says, "Hoya oimed chutz latanur, v'sheretz betanur, v'hoishit yodo l'chaloin v'notal es halogin v'evira api tanur." Rabbi Kiva metame. We'll go over the source again, but before we actually get into the Gemara, let's take advantage of a subtopic heading that will accompany this Gemara. On the outside margin, you'll notice we have a title called Tat Nosim, Subtopics. Mei Chatos Shnitmu, the Mei Chatos, the Pora Aduma water that became Tomei. The Rebbe Lazar Mitarin. We saw this already, that according to Rebbe Lazar, such waters will be effective in being Mitahir. The Rabbonan Einon Mitarin. According to Rabbonan, though, the waters will not be effective. Since the waters themselves became Tomei, they cannot be Metahir. Another point, Ha'avoras Mei Chatos Al Gabi Tanush Yesh Bo Sheretz. This is the topic that we're about to embark upon in the Gemara itself, where one passes a vessel containing Mei Chatos over a Tanur, an oven, that has within it a dead Sheretz. A Sheretz is a source of Tuma, and the Sheretz imposes its Tuma in the tanur, when the sheretz is in the airspace of the tanur of this oven. And what's happening in our Gemara will be the passing of a vessel containing the mei chatos over the tanur. Rabbi Kiva metame. Rabbi Kiva says that the water becomes tomei. Rabbi Chachom mitarin. The Chachom say that mere passing over airspace does not convey tuma. Another point that we'll see later in the Gemara is Moide Rabbi Akiva b'hazo'o shevira agabi kli cheres tamei shehi tahoira. Rabbi Akiva will concede that in the case of the sprinkling of the that's called the hazo'o, the sprinkling action of the mei para, let's say that one is casting in a sprinkling fashion the mei para over as a vessel that's tomei, the case of the sprinkling as opposed to the case of a vessel containing the water, where the water itself is passing in midair over a kli cheres tomei, over an earthenware vessel that became tomei, Rabbi Kiva will concede that the water remains tohar. Turning back to the Gemara, we mentioned that Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Lozer, who said that Mei Chatos that became Tomei has the power of being Metahir. Where does he see that? Where does he know that from? He knows it from the fact that we are Mazeh, we sprinkle a Nida. A Nida is a woman who happens to be Tomei. Is it not so that the water, as it is about to reach the Nida, or let us say this way, the water, when it comes into contact with the Nida, the water itself becomes Tomei. Rabba wants to say, in order to explain a certain seeming discrepancy, where Rabbi Lozer tries to prove from the case of Nida Mazen Aleha, he wants to prove a halacha concerning Mei Chatos that already became Tomei. On the surface, it would seem that one is not like the other. On the surface, it would seem that the mei chatos that became tomei previously is one situation, and the nida that we're sprinkling on is another situation. Because In the case of the sprinkling of the mei chatos onto the nidah, we were not dealing with mei chatos that had become tomei previously. So how can you prove from the case of nidah mazin oleha, where we sprinkle upon a nidah, and that is effective, as we explained before, how can we prove from that that mei chatos that was previously tomei is also effective? So Rabbah says, I can do it. Because Rebbe Lozar, in this case, is proving, Rebbe Lozar, who's proving his halacha of previously tamei mei chatos from the case of nido mazin oleo, in fact, the case of nido mazin oleo is by definition mei chatos shnitnu. How is that? So Rabbo explains that Rebbe Lozar is following the shita of Rebbe Akiva. Rabbi Akiva's shita is that mei pora, mei chatos, that hovers over in the airspace of something that itself is tamei, the water becomes tamei. So as the water was about to hit the nidah, before it came into contact with the nidah, the water itself became tamei. So that's a good example of mei chatos shinemu, mei chatos that was tamei before it reached the client, and yet we know that in the case of a woman who's a nidah, the sprinkling that we do to her is effective. Even though, in effect, the water that comes into contact with her is water that became tamei by virtue of Rabbi Akiva's principle. What's the case that Rabbi Akiva himself deals with? So before we reread the Gemara that featured the source with Rabbi Akiva in it, let's describe the situation. Imagine the following. Imagine a windowsill with a flask of mei pora sitting on this windowsill. Right up against the wall where the window is located is a tanur. And the tanur has in its airspace a dead sheretz. As we move further away from the tanur into, let's say, toward the middle of the room, there's a person who is going to reach over the tanur, take the flask of mei chatos from the windowsill, pass it over the tanur to bring it to himself. That's the case that we see in this Tanaic source, and Rabbi Akiva rules that by carrying or by passing the vessel over the tanur with the sheretz in it, the mei pora becomes tamei. So according to Rabbi Akiva, even without actual contact with the mei pora and the source of tuma, the fact that the mei pora is passed over the airspace of a source of tuma is sufficient, is enough to render the mei pora itself tamei. If then you ask yourself, so how is the sprinkling on a nida of the mei pora effective? So Rebbe Lozer concludes, it must be because mei chatos shenit me'u is mitahir. In fact, is still effective. We just mentioned, and we're going to be rereading the Gemara from the last narrow line of the Gemara. It was pointed out by Rabbah that Rebbe Lozer is based on Shitas Rebbe Akiva, his teacher, that claimed that Havoras Kli Agabi Mokam Tomei Kemunach Tomei, that the mere passing of a vessel containing Mei Chatos over an area of Tuma is as if it's resting on the Tuma. The Snan Hoya Oimed Chutz L'Tanur, a person is standing on the other side of a Tanur that's positioned up alongside a windowsill, up alongside a wall in which there's a window above. The sheretz betanur, and there's a dead sheretz which imparts tuma to the tanur. The hoishit yado lechalon, and the person standing on the other side of the oven reaches his hand toward the windowsill. The notel salogin takes the flask containing the mechatos, the heviroi al pi tanur, and carries it over the airspace of the tanur. Rabbi Akiva metame. Rabbi Akiva says, by virtue of the fact that the mei chatos passed over the tanur with the sheretz in it, the mei chatos becomes tamei v'chachomim mitarin. And the chachomim say it's not affected. Ubaha pligi, and their machlokis is based on the following: Rabbi Akiva savar kemunach domi, that which is passing over, it's as if it's coming to rest in the tanur. V'rabbanan savri lav kemunach domi, that since it's merely passing over, it's not as if it came to rest in the tanur. V'esve abaye, and Abaye raises an objection to this analysis, namely the analysis of Rabbah. Abaye presents a Tanaic source where we see Rabbi Akiva, who, even though he disagrees with the case of passing a vessel over a place of Tumah, with regard to the sprinkling itself of the water itself passing over a place of Tumah, it's not ruined. It remains Tahor. So we see from this scenario that it can't possibly be that passing over is kemunach domi. Otherwise, why would the water itself being sprinkled, passing over a source of tumah, and eventually where he's sprinkling onto a person at standing at some distance, and the water before it hits the person passes over a place of tumah, but yet the water remains tahor, according to Rabbi Akiva himself. That point thereby shows that Rabbah's analysis of Rabbi Akiva, that it's viewed kemunach domi, is not accurate. Therefore, Rabbi Abaye will present his analysis a little bit later. Let us now read the Tanaic source that's the basis of Abaye's kasha. Moide Rabbi Akiva behazo Shehaviro al gabi kli cheris tome. Let's read that again. Al gabi kli cheris tome. Oy al gabi mishkav u'moishav tome. Shehi tahoira. Rabbi Akiva, who we saw previously, said that passing over of a vessel containing mechatas over an area that is tome imparts tuma to the mechatos in the vessel, will concede that the hazah, the sprinkling itself of the water itself over something that's tome, and the examples given here were a kli cheres tome or a mishkav u'moshav, which are tome. The mishkav and moshav are references to beds and chairs that absorbed tuma. The sprinkling, the water itself, and we've dashed underline, this is the key expression, shehi toiro, that it's not nitmo, it's not tome in mid-air. That right away is unlike Rabbah's analysis of Rabbi Akiva. She'ein l'chodovor she'metame l'malo kilamato, there is nothing that imparts tuma in a vertical fashion over its airspace, ela kizayis min ames, Ushar kol amahilin lasuye even hamurugas. The exception being a piece of corpse and other mahilim, other things that impart tuma through airspace, would include the stone that has on it tsoras. That's even hamurugas, the stone that has a nega on it. So, with the exception of tumas meis and tsoras, there is no tumas oihel. Therefore, the sprinkling that passes over the airspace of a klicheres tome, of like the example we had before of the sherets that was in an earthenware oven, the sprinkling itself, the water itself that's sprinkled over it and eventually hits the client needing the tara, the water itself does not become tome. Therefore, we have to understand in a different way why Rabbi Akiva above, in the case of the flask being passed over the tanur with the sherets in it, why the water in the flask, the water, the mei por aduma water, did become tamei. But one thing is clear, it's not because of that which Rabbah said, that passage over a makom tamei is as if it is resting in the tumah. Elo Omar Abaye. Therefore, Abaye comes up with his analysis. De Kule Almo. Everyone, including Rabbi Akiva, will tell you Lav Kemunach Domi. The mere passing over of something is not as if it is at rest in the Tumah. V'hocha, v'ha k'mithlugi. Here in the case of the lugin, of the flask being passed over the tanur, in which we saw on the second wide line of Machlokis, Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, the following is the basis of their controversy. The Rabbi Kiva Savar, Gazrinon Shemo Yonuach. We're afraid that if you're passing the vessel containing the Mei Paraduma over the Tanur, you may come to rest it on the Tanur. And hence, Rabbi Kiva imposes or holds that the Rabbanan would make a gzera. Well, Rabbi Kiva holds that one should make a gzera, a preventive ruling, and thereby render the water tamei by the mere passing over, not because airspace conveys the tuma, but as a preventive measure, as a gzera, so that you don't come to rest the login in actuality in the tanur. The Rabbanan Savri, the Rabbanan who rule that the water in the login above was tar, they hold lo gazrinon, that there's no need to impose a ruling, a preventive ruling. Umoide Rabbi Akiva though will concede the hazah in the case of the sprinkling of the water itself that passes over the tanur. Kevin de nofak nofak, once the water leaves your hands in the sprinkling action, it's left. It's not going to come to rest in the tanur. It's in flight. It's in midair. It's not that I am still in control of it, as was the case with the login that I was holding and moving over the tanur. There's room to suggest maybe I'll come to place the login in the tanur, but in the sprinkling action, where I'm standing at a distance and sprinkling the water from my hand over to the client that needs the sprinkling, and it just happens to pass over the tanur, the water isn't going to come to rest in the tanur under any circumstances. That's when we're talking about water that's in midair, or more accurately, water that's in flight. If that be the case, what about Shitas Rebbe Eliezer above, Rebbe Lozer, and the Rabbonon above, with regard to Mechatos Shenitme'u? V'Rebbe Elozer v'Rabbonon v'Maiko Mifligi. Let's just review a point that we opened up with earlier. Rebbe Elozer, this was in the Tanaic source, toward the end of the narrow lines, we saw that Rebbe Elozer held that Mei Chatos, that became Tomei, is effective in being Metaher. The Rabbanan, who did not appear in the source, but there is a Rabbanan that disagrees with him on that. What is the explanation of Shitas Rebbe Elozer that Mei Chatos Shenitme'u are Metaher? Now, we cannot say any more like we explained earlier. Just to quickly review, earlier we spoke about the Nida achieving Tara as being the basis of Rebbe Elozer, and we had explained that in the case of the Nida, the water as it passed over her, or as it was about to reach her, became Tameh by virtue of its being in the airspace of the Nida, and still she achieved Tara, thereby demonstrating that the water which was already Tameh before it hit her is still effective. But we can't say that anymore. That was Rabba's analysis, attaching Rebbe Elozer to Rabbi Akiva in Rabba's perception of Rabbi Akiva. But now that we're not going to follow that analysis anymore, we have to understand once again Rebbe Elozer's reasoning. What did Rebbe Elozer say? He said that Mei Chatos that was previously Tomei is still capable of being metayer, of affording purification. And he cited as a precedent for that the fact that we are mazeh on a nida. But we pointed out that the case of mazeh on a nida, the water was not tomei beforehand. So how can he prove from the case of nida mazeh alel his halacha of mei chatos shenitmu, the mei chatos that was tomei already previously? The Abaye goes on, or the Gemara goes on, explaining. Rebbe Elozer v'Rabbanan b'Maiko Mifligi. We've dashed underline this because this is the point of focus right now. Omar Abaye, we have a trapezoid or volcano shape over Abaye. This is explained in the outside margin of the Mivneh. De'ois lahasbir machlokas rolozer rabbonon b'mei chatos shenitmu. These are two opinions in the analysis of the machlokas tanoim. So Omar Abaye, bedonin tuma keduma mituma sheba'oisa sha'a komiflegi. Am I to derive the case of, or the case of something that was tome previously, tuma keduma, from the case of tuma that happened simultaneously with the tahara? What's an example of tuma that happens simultaneously with the tahara? That was, of course, the case of the nida, that as soon as the water touches her, the water becomes tome. However, it's at that point that she is achieving her tahara. That's a case of tuma ba'isasha. Can I learn or compare that to the case of mechatos that became tome previously, before it hit the client, before it reached the client that needs the tahara? Well, Mar Sovar Donin, Rebbe Elazar holds, you are allowed to derive the halacha of mechatos nitmeu, mechatos that became tome previously, from the case of tuma ba'isasha, as he did in the case, in proving the case of mechatos nitmeu from the case of nido mazin olel. Umar Sovar, the Rabbanon who disagree, hold, Ein Donin. The Rabbanon will tell you that when the water becomes Tomei simultaneously with its hitting the client, there the water is considered still effective. However, to learn from that to allow water that was already Tomei before it ever came into contact with the client, that far we won't go. It's at this point you may notice that the long teretz marking ends. This is the end of Rav Chisda's presentation concerning the issue, let's not forget, the issue of the blood, of a sacrificial blood that is worthy of sprinkling, that gets absorbed into a garment that is Tomei. There you have a situation of Tuma happening simultaneously with the need for kibbutz. How are we to view that? So if we glance in Rashi, we've provided a star in order to help you find the Rashi quickly. The Rashi on the fourth wide line under the Gemara, Rabbi Elazar Savar Donin, Rabbanan Savri Ein Donin, Ulegabi Nitaz Dam Chatos Albegetomi. Regarding the opening question of the splattering of the dam of the korban chatos on a beged that's tome, the bayal on liel that we asked about earlier, where the dam becomes simultaneously needing of kibbutz and becoming tome. By the way, we should just point out that dam that's tome itself is not fit for sprinkling. So in and of itself, that would be an exemption for the need for kibbutz. However, the need for kibbutz arose at the moment that it became tomei in its absorption into the beget. So that remains, that's the question. And so Rashi continues, we say that that question is also nami plukta de Rebbe Elazar v'Rabbanan hu. The way they argue regarding the mei chatos, that shenitme'u, they will also argue regarding the case of the dam that gets absorbed into the garment that's tamei. To the Rebbe Elazar, ein ta'un kibbutz. Rebbe Elazar will say, in our question, there will be no need for kibbutz. The tumo shebashas nefila, ketumo shelifnei nefila. Just like in the case of the mechatos, he paralleled the cases of simultaneous with the case of previous tuma. So too, he will use the same analysis in the case of the blood getting absorbed into the beged. Let's go over that. Let us talk about blood that was tome before it got absorbed into the beged. Well, that certainly would not require kibbutz, because that's dam that's not fit for sprinkling. So, just like dam that became tome prior to its being absorbed in the beged is exempt from kibbutz, dam that becomes tome simultaneously with its being absorbed into the beged where the kibbutz need would arise, Rebbe Elazar will tell you, it too does not need kibbutz. Ulu Rabbanan, going on in the Rashi, lo domu adadi. The case of previously tomei is not similar to the case of simultaneously becoming tomei. V'hai, the gamrina naliba the rabba. Rashi's pointing out, why did the Gemara answer, Rav Chisda answer, that the issue will be derived by the Rabbah as was explained by Abaye, when in fact it's really Abaye's analysis that carries the day. So Rashi goes on to explain that Abaye was a Talmud of Rabbah, and after Rabbah said what he did, Abaye asked on it and offered his own explanation, and Rabbah was moide to that. Therefore, Rabbah is still considered part of the picture, part of the answer. As we go on in the Gemara, Rava Omar, de kule almo ein donin. Rava will tell you that everyone will not learn the halacha of previously tome water from the case of water of the poraduma becoming tome simultaneously with its reaching the client that needs the tahara. So if that be the case, if everyone agrees that you don't learn one from the other, so how is it that Rav Elazar holds that mei chata shenitmu are metayer? V'hocha behalko miflegi. The Gemara will explain the two Shitas Tanaim. We'll just mention ahead of time that the Gemara's explanation is rather terse. We will then look into Rashi for a fuller understanding of Rava's approach. So the Gemara mentions that the Machlokes Tanoim regarding the Mechatos, the Mechatos in it, was as follows. The Rebbe Lozer Sovar Hazo Tzricha Shi'ur, that the Hazor of the Mei Pora is something that requires a fixed amount of water, as opposed to just a mashihu, any amount, any minuscular amount. Rabbi Elazar says the amount has a defined quantity. Umitzarfin lahazos, and we are mitzarif. In other words, if less than a shiur hit the client, reached the client in the sprinkling of the water on him, that's no reason for concern, because you can do an additional sprinkling and enable the two partial quantities to equal a full quantity. Therefore, we see within Shitas Rebbe Elazar that let us say you were sprinkling on a person that, well, as is the case, they're always tomei before the sprinkling takes place, and then you sprinkle a partial amount of water on them. Well, that partial amount of water is really ineffective in and of itself, when it hits the person, the water is tomei, and yet we allow a second sprinkling, that's mashlim, that completes the shear, to metahir the individual. So we see from this that a hazah shenitme'a, a hazah, part of which became tomei, in other words, the first partial quantity is joining up with the subsequent amount to create tahara. So in effect, we are seeing hazah shenitme'a affording tahara, affording purification. Once again, by the fact that we're joining up the first partial amount of water, which already became tomei, with the subsequent sprinkling to be mashlim to complete the required quantity, you are achieving tahara through the use of tomei water. For Rabbanan Savri, hazah ein tzricha shiur. The Rabbanan hold that even a minuscule amount of paraduma water that hits the client achieves tahara, achieves the requirement, we'll say, the required sprinkling. And therefore, as soon as any amount hits them, it's considered effective. So we don't have any proof within the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan, therefore, don't conclude from the case of Hazah on a person that's Tomei to the case of water that had already become Tomei and its effectiveness. They, therefore, hold that water that was previously Tomei will not be effective. If we look in the Rashi, the Kuli Almo ain't Donin, V'rbalazer tuma keduma mituma shabay sisho yolif elo the v'rbalazer savar hazal tzricha shiur. It's true that within the spectrum of Rebbe Lazar, you see a form of Tuma Keduma being learned from Tuma Shabbos Shah, but not like we spoke about previously, but from a different angle. Rebbe Lazar holds that Hazos Rechashiu Umitzarfin Lazos, and we allow the joining up to complete the required quantity. The chinoflo hazah kamaisa alo, when the first hazah fell on the client, akati lav hazahi letara, it still was insufficient. The first partial quantity was insufficient for achieving purification. The avagav shinit meis hazah rishona kishinoga ba, even though, and this is the main point, even though that first quantity became Tome when it hit the client, it joins up with the second sprinkling to complete the required amount. What do we see from this? Alma, we see from this that mechata shenitmeu lifnei hazo mitaharin. That we see. But of course, with Rava's approach, we're not necessarily going to discover anything regarding the question of the chatos dam that got absorbed into the tome garment. The analysis of that original question could be dealt with through Abaye's approach to the sugya, as we illustrated beforehand when we looked at the Rashi with the star. Continuing in the Gemara, chatos psula v'chulei. Tonu Rabbanan. Our Mishnah, by the way, had mentioned that if the korban was posel, chatas psula, so the blood of a chatas psula does not necessitate kibbutz. The Gemara provides a Tanaic source with sources for these halachas. The posuk in Vayikra, Perek Vav posuk Chaf, has the word mi dama. For reference to these psukim, we included them on our Daf Tzadi Beis Omid Aleph of the Shas Ozer, in which you could see the pasuk Kol Asher Yiga B'Vsar Yigash V'Asher Yizeh Mi Domo Al HaBeged Asher Yizeh Oleo T'Chabez B'Mokom Kodosh. So in that pasuk you have the word Mi Domo, and we learn from that Midam K'Shero V'Lo Midam P'Sula, that the word Mi Domo is a mute, it's a limitation word. From its dam, blood from a particular kind of sacrifice gets absorbed to the exclusion of dam of a korban that's posel. Rabbi Akiva Omer. Rabbi Akiva has 2 points, and we've labeled them Aleph and Beis. Hoysel oshas hakosher v'nipsala dama ta'on kibus. If the blood happened to have been fit at a certain point and then became posel, the dam nevertheless does necessitate kibbutz. However, if you have an example of blood that never was fit for sprinkling, ain't domoton kibbutz. Such blood would not necessitate the washing out. Rabbi Shimon Omer, echod zeh v'echod zeh, ain't domoton kibbutz. Even if it had a shas hakosher, according to Rabbi Shimon, the dam would not generate a need for kibbutz. My time all de Rabbi Shimon. What's the basis of Rabbi Shimon's opinion? Ksiv oisa. That's in posuk chof beis. Uksiv mi doma. That's in posuk chof. These are two limitation words or exclusionary type words. Chad. One of the words will exclude a case where the dam was fit at a certain point but became posel later on. And the other word will exclude the situation where the dam was never fit for sprinkling. Rabbi Akiva, what does Rabbi Akiva say about these two limitation words? He says that oisa, the word oisa, which was in posuk chof beis, Prat Litruma. That comes to really talk about a different topic. It concerns the topic of the rinsing out of copper vessels. And we saw the psukim for that, and naturally be very worthwhile looking back at the psukim on as we had written them on the side of Daf Tzadi Beis Amud Aleph. Pasuk Chof Beis is in the vicinity of the halacha of Mrikon Shtifa. Mrikon Shtifa was the subject of Pasuk Chof Aleph. So the word Osa, which is a limitation word, is a limitation within the realm of rinsing out of vessels as opposed to the washing of garments. And in that context, Rabbi Akiva says the word Osa tells us that with regard to the need to rinse out vessels, that's true with regard to sacrifices that were cooked in those vessels, but not in the case of truma. And that's what this expression means, prat l'truma, that a vessel that had truma cooked in it would not generate an obligation of mrika u'shtifa. Rabbi Shimon l'tamei. Rabbi Shimon, who used the two limitation words, including the word osa, for the purposes of kibbutz and not for the purpose of mrika and shtifa, he doesn't need the word osa to exclude truma from mrika shtifa, because Rabbi Shimon is consistent with what he said elsewhere, Diomar. Rabbi Shimon, who has said, kachim kalim ein tunin mrika shtifa, that sacrifices themselves that are of a low level sanctity don't need mriko shtifa, but kol shekein truma, and certainly truma would not need, truma being of a lesser level of sanctity than kodshim kalim, certainly truma would not have any need for mriko shtifa. So the exclusion of truma is achieved through other means, therefore enabling Rabbi Shimon to darshan the word osa for what he said before regarding the blood and getting absorbed into garments, and since it's posel, it does not generate a chiyuv kvisa. The Mishnah. Nitaz min hatzavor ala beged, eino toun kibus. If blood spatters from the neck of a slaughtered sacrifice onto a garment, so from the neck onto the garment, that does not generate a chiyuv of kibus. Min hakerenu min hayesoid, eino to'un kibus. If blood splatters from the keren, from the corner of the mizbeach, after the blood hit the mizbeach, it then splattered from that onto the garment, that would not require kibus. Min ha-yesoid, Rashi points out, based on the Gemara that we learned earlier in the Masichta, is a reference to blood that is destined for the yesod, for the base of the mizbeach. And that's a reference to the shirayim. The shirayim, that's blood that will eventually be poured to the base of the mizbeach. That's the blood that exists after the primary zrikos, the primary sprinklings were already done. So the leftover blood, eino tolen kibus, does not generate a need for kibus if it gets absorbed onto a garment. Nishbach halo ritzpo v'osfoi ein tolen kibus. If blood spilled from the neck of the animal that was just slaughtered, just cut, and the blood flowed from the neck onto the floor of the Azara, that would not generate, if that blood then got onto a garment, that would not generate a need for kibbutz. Those are three halachas, and they've been labeled with our markings, Aleph, Beis, and Gimel, and you'll notice that each one of those letterings was circled. Now we have a fourth point in the Mishnah, but later in the Gemara, you will appreciate why this is marked off just a bit differently. Fourth point is Ein ton kibus el adam shniskabel bekli v'roi lazo. There is no need for kibus except for the case of dam that was received in the service vessel in anticipation of its being used for sprinkling. But we're talking about dam that was received into the receiving vessel, the service vessel, the roi laza, and it must be fit for sprinkling. The Gemara will ask, this fourth point seems to be superfluous. We could have derived that from that which was stated already beforehand in the Mishnah. Hence, we've marked it off as a little differently to generate a certain awareness of the problem of the presence of this fourth point. Tono Rabbanon. Yochol nitaz minatzavar lebege yeton kibus. Could it be that blood that splatters from the neck of a slaughtered sacrifice the blood that splatters from that point onto a garment, Yehi Tohen Kibus, that should require Kibus? Talmud Lomar, Asher Yizeh. Lo Omarti Loch Elo Beroi Lahazo. The Torah tells us that such dam that's nitas from the tzavor would not require kibbutz, because the pasuk talks about asher yizeh, that's a reference to blood that is fit for hazah. And what kind of blood is fit for hazah? Blood that was received in a service vessel. Tanya idach. Yochol nitas min hakeren min hayesod yoton kibbutz? Could it be blood that splattered from the corner of the mizbeach after it was sprinkled onto the mizbeach? Or blood that's destined for the yesod, would that generate a need for kibbutz if bloods like this get absorbed into the garment? Talmud lomar asher yizeh. The pasuk says blood that will be sprinkled. Prat lozeh shekvar huzah, to the exclusion of these cases, which represents blood that was already sprinkled. And it's talking about blood that was already sprinkled. In the case of the keren, it's ricocheting off the keren. In the case of the yesod, we're talking about remainder blood, blood that remains after the basic sprinkling was already done. Nishpach al ritzpa. So the Mishnah said, Ein ton kibbutz el shiskabel b'kli v'roi lahazah. And we pointed out, as we read the Mishnah, that when you get to the fourth point in the Mishnah, it seems to be superfluous. The Gemara asks, Ha su lomali. What do I need this final point for? The Gemara answers, in fact, it's not to be understood as a final point, as a separate fourth point, but rather as a source of reason for that which was stated previously in the Mishnah. Ma tam komar. The fourth line is an offering of an explanation to that which appeared just before. And we've used a frame to indicate that this is the intention of the Mishnah. Ma tam nishvach halo ritzva v'yosfo ein tohen kibbutz. Why is it that blood that spilled from the neck of the animal onto the floor and then subsequently gathered up, if that blood then gets onto a garment, it does not generate a need for kibbutz? Answer, l'fi she'ein tohen kibbutz el adam sheniskabel b'kli v'roi lahazo. The only thing that requires kibbutz is dam that was received in a vessel and is fit for hazah. So that, technically speaking, when we read the Mishnah and you come to point number gimel in the Mishnah, it's not to be understood as a statement per se, but it's really the posing of a question. The case of nishvach ritzpah, spilled from the neck of the animal onto the floor and gathered up, doesn't need kibbutz, you're really supposed to read that as, why is that so? And then you read point Dalet as the explanation, the answer to why nishbach ala ritzpah minat sabor is not requiring of kibbutz. Roy lahazah. This is a quote from the Mishnah, and you'll notice we have an arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara indicating Omer Aleph, so you can see where this quote is coming from. The Mishnah had mentioned that Ein Ton Kibbutz El Adam Shinskabel B'Kli V'Roi LaHazah. The type of dam that necessitates the need for the rinsing of the garment when the dam gets absorbed into it is dam that's fit for sprinkling. The Gemara asks, L'mutei Mai, to the exclusion of what? So the Gemara answers, and you'll notice before we read the answer that we have in front of us a rather long answer marking. This you can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a tuff that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. So the Gemara explains that this is Limute Kibel Pochus Mikdei Hazor B'Klizeh U'Pochus Mikdei Hazor B'Klizeh. We're excluding a case where the blood was received in a service vessel, but the amount of blood that was received in the service vessel was less than the amount that would suffice for the sprinkling. He received the blood from the slaughtered sacrifice in two vessels, each vessel containing pochos michadei hazoya, less than the required amount. So when you have a situation like that, the blood was received in two separate vessels, each vessel containing less than the necessary amount needed for the sprinkling, blood like that, that if it splatters on a garment, would not create a requirement for kibbutz. And this concept of pochos mikdei hazoya beklizeh, upochos mikdei hazoya beklizeh, is seen in the case of mei chatos, the case of the pora aduma water. Interestingly, just like in the sugya before, we had a long discussion concerning the, we introduced the mei chatos into our discussion concerning blood that it got absorbed into a tomei garment. In this sugya too, we're going to be drawing from the case of the mei chatos as an illustration or source or precedent for this particular issue of pochos mechdei hazoya b'kli zeh. The sanya, the source, as we mentioned, features the mei chatos, the pora aduma water. Rabbi Chalafta bar Shaul Omer, kidesh pochos mechdei hazoya b'kli zeh, upochos mechdei hazoya b'kli zeh, lo kidesh. The concept of kidesh, when it comes to the mei chatos, has to do with water that you drew into a kli, into a vessel, water from a live spring, and then you scatter over the water, or put into the water the ashes of the burnt red cow. That process of scattering the ashes on the water is called kiddush mechatos. It just so happens that you had a very small quantity of water in the kli, in the vessel into which you want to sprinkle the ashes, and that's called pochos mechdei hazoya. This source is telling us that if he tries to be mekadesh the water, but the amount of water is less than the required amount, it's less than an amount fit for sprinkling, then the kiddush is considered ineffective. V'ibaya laho bedam mahu. The question is raised regarding sacrificial blood that is received in a service vessel. How are we to view that? We're talking, of course, about a case of receiving the blood of a sacrifice. Rashi points out that we're actually inquiring about the chatois hapnimios, that you received less than the required amount of blood in a vessel, and then the same thing in a second vessel, a less than required amount, and then mixed them together for the sprinklings in the heichal. Is that considered a legitimate method, a legitimate way of doing Kabbalah Sadam? So the question was raised, Bedam Mahu, and this answer, or the presentation of the question, is in giving you two sides, Aleph, and the next line you see the squiggle line, O Dilma Beis, or possibly another way of looking at it. So Aleph, Hilchisahi, is it so that the Mei Chatos is an oral tradition? Hilchisah is Halacha Mishmi Sinai. And being that it's a halacha l'mishmi Sinai, it might be such a teaching that's restricted to the meichatos. So mehilchos loma gamrinon, and we have this awareness that we don't compare topics one to the other when the original topic is the product of a halacha l'mishmi Sinai, of an oral tradition. So if the meichatos halacha that we just read was a halacha l'mishmi Sinai, we don't learn from that to the case of blood. Oy dilma, or possibly hosamai taimo, the case of the mei chatos, of the paraduma water, might be governed by a pasuk, dechtiv, which says, v'toval b'mayim. And from that pasuk, from the fact that it says in the pasuk, b'mayim, the bays being vowelized with a patach, in the water, instead of just saying the water, in the known water, it's mashma that we're talking about water that was already described, so that it's talking about water that already at the shas kiddush had the required amount. So just like in the case of the mei paraduma, the pasuk says v'taval ba mayim, which tells me that originally at the Shas Kiddush it had to have the required amount. Hochanami, in the case of the Dam, And Kabbalah Sadam, it says, Ksiv v'toval badam. Toshma. So the answer to this particular inquiry is the Omer Rabbi Zrika, Omer Rabbi Lozer, Af Bedam Lo Kidesh. Just like in the case of the Pora Aduma, so too in the case of the receiving of the Dam, it's not considered sanctified blood suitable for application in the Heichal. Omar Rava Tanya Nami Hochi. Rava supplies a Tanaic source that supports this. The Pasuk says, V'toval. The Pasuk is talking about V'toval Etzbo Badam, where the Kohen is expected to immerse his finger in the blood in anticipation of the blood applications. So it says, V'toval V'lo Misapeg. This is to the exclusion of a case where he's wiping blood off the inside walls of the vessel. That would not be the right way to get the blood onto the finger, but rather through immersing the finger into the blood that's in the bottom of the vessel. Badam, ad she badam shiur tvilo meikoro. This we've dashed underlined because this is the main point for us, that the blood must have the required amount initially. Initially, meaning at the point of receiving the blood, you must receive a complete amount that would enable tevilas etzba. Min hadam equals min hadam shebeinyan. This point will be discussed a little bit later on, but for the time being, we can say that this is teaching me that for each sprinkling of blood that is done, the finger must be immersed again and again for each application or each sprinkling. The itzrich lemichtav v'toval, the itzrich lemichtav badam. Both of the expressions that we saw in the Tanaic source, you have v'toval, and we learned v'lo misapeg and madam, also to teach me about the shiur. I need both of these expressions. The ikos of rachmona v'toval, Havamina avapi deleko shiur tvila mei koroi. I might have thought that even if there wasn't a sufficient amount of blood initially during the Kabbalah Sadam, but you were makabel a too small a shiur in one vessel and likewise in the second vessel, and then subsequently poured one into the other, thereby creating a sufficient amount, maybe that would have been kosher. Therefore, kosav rachmona badam, that at the initial receipt of the dam, there must already be a sufficient amount. The kosav rachmona badam, had the Torah written that word, havamina filu mesapeg, I would have thought that even wiping off the blood with one's finger from the inside wall of the vessel would be a sufficient method of getting the dam into a position for sprinkling. On because of Rachmana v'toval, therefore the Torah writes the word v'toval, excluding that method of wiping off the blood. As we pointed out earlier, we now have a quote from the source above, and you can see this by using the little star that you have to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, and compare that or find the parallel one just a few lines up. You can see where this quote is coming from. Min hadam shebeinyan limute mai. What is this coming to exclude? Amar Rava limute shirayim shebeetzva. That means that if after the kohen had immersed his finger in the blood and sprinkled from the blood that was on his finger, he must immerse the finger again for the next sprinkling and not attempt to do the second sprinkling with residual blood that was left on the finger after the first sprinkling. That's what limute, to the exclusion of shirayim, the residue blood sheva etzva that remains on the finger after a given sprinkling. So that when multiple sprinklings are required, in advance of each sprinkling, there must be an immersion of the finger. And not to rely on the blood that remained on the finger after a given sprinkling. Misayale l'Rabbi Elazar. V'yomer Rabbi Elazar, shirayim sheba etzba psulim. This teaching that we just learned from the Braisa supports Rabbi Elazar's teaching that residue blood on the finger is posel. Before we go on, in addition to the fact that we've dashed underlined Shem Shebetz Absulim because we want to focus on Rabbi Elazar's point, we now encounter a triangle. This is seen explained in the outside margin. First of all, we have a Nosei, which is a reference to Shirayim Shebetzba. And then we have a Mivneh heading, a structural note describing the triangles. So the triangles here appear as a Ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the back and forth, the flow of the Gemara. So with the point facing up, we have kushios, their questions, al Rabbi Elazar, on Rabbi Elazar's teaching that says, Shirayim Shebetzba Psulin. We'll see reason for thinking that maybe it's kosher. And then with the inverted triangle, the point facing down, tshuva, those are responses. You notice that we have a triangle marking. Let us take a look at the outside margin for our Mivneh heading. The triangles represent a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a discussion as it goes back and forth. The triangle with the point facing up will be a kushya, a question, al Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar, who spoke about the Shirayim Sheba Etzva being psulim, and with the triangle inverted, point facing downwards, those will be answers. So we continue in the Gemara, Amalei Rovin Bar Rav Ado L'Rova. Omar Talmidcha, Omar of Amram, Rovin turns to Rava and says, your Talmud said in the name of Rav Amram, Tanina, that we have a Tanaic source that will pose a difficulty, pose a question to Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar, who said Shirayim Sheba Etzva Psulim, which you notice is dashed, underlined just a couple lines up, as we mentioned, we want to focus on this. We have the following source, Hoyo Mazeh Venitzo Hazo Miyodoi. Hazor was being done, sprinkling was being done, and we're talking about the Hazor of blood, of sacrificial blood. He was Mazeh Chatos HaPnimios, blood from internal sin offerings. Ad Sheloi Hizor Toun Kibus, prior to the actual sprinkling, blood like that that gets absorbed into a garment would obligate the garment to undergo kibus, rinsing. However, mishahiza ein ton kibus. My love, how are we to understand this? Hochikomar, is it not to be understood as follows? Ad shelo gomar milahazois ton kibus. Mishagomar lahazos ein ton kibus. Let's go over this. There are two points over here, but the first point will be of extreme importance for us for this question. We should point out that we have this is a long question that started with the triangle, point facing up, a number of lines up, ending over here. You can see this to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. But what did we just see in this particular last, in this Hochi Ka'omar? It said, Ad shelo gomar milahazos ton kibus, until he finishes all of the hazos. Any blood up till the end of the Hazos would necessitate kibus. This would include even blood that spatters from the finger between each Hazos, each sprinkling. We've mentioned earlier that as each sprinkling takes place, the Kohen immerses his finger in the blood in anticipation of the next sprinkling. And in the sprinklings that are done in the Heichal would require multiple sprinklings. So until he finishes all of the sprinklings, the blood that's on the finger would necessitate kibus. This includes the blood after any given sprinkling, before he re-immerses his finger again, he's got Shirayim Sheba Etzba. And we're saying right now that any of that shirayim shebe'etzba that would spatter on a garment would necessitate kibbutz, which shows that that blood is kosher, is fit. And that is unlike Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar said that shirayim shebe'etzba is posel. Lo, the Gemara responds, Hochi Komar. Thusly, one should understand this source. Ad shelo yotzitza hazo miyodoi ton kibus. Before the blood left his finger, if it spatters on the garment, it would require kibus. However, mishi yotzitza hazo miyodo. As soon as the blood is in flight, when after the blood is in flight, the blood that will hit the its destination, the poroches, let's say. After that, the only blood that's left after it's the sprinkling has left its has left the finger is the shirayim shebe'etzba. So mishiyotzitza miyado, after the sprinkling was done, ein ton kibbutz, blood that splatters after the sprinkling left his hand would not require kibbutz, and that's a reference to the shirayim shebe'etzba. Now, why would the shirayim shebe'etzba not necessitate kibbutz? Because that is done, that's posel, it's not fit, and therefore there's no kibbutz obligation. Esve Abaye. Abaye raises an objection. This source deals with the Pora Aduma. The Pora Aduma was slaughtered on Har HaMashcha, the Mount of Olives, opposite the eastern side of the Beis HaMikdash, on the mountain facing the eastern side of the Beis HaMikdash, and in the processing of a Porah Tumah, there was sprinklings of blood that were done while standing on what's called Har HaMashcha in the direction of the Beis HaMikdash. It says in that source regarding the processing of the Porah Tumah, Gomar Milahazois Mekaneach Yodoi Begufa Shopora. After he finishes the Hazor, he wipes his hand on the body of the Pora Aduma, of the red cow. And we infer that Gomar in, when does he wipe his hand? Wipe his hand to get the blood off of it. He wipes it on the body. That's after he finished the Hazos. However, lo Gomar lo. But if he hasn't finished the Hazos, he has not finished the sprinklings, then there's no wiping of the hand. That indicates that until he finishes the sprinklings, the Shirayim are fit for Hazos. Hence, he doesn't wipe his hand. Omar le. So the Gemara responds. Could be that Rova is responding each time. Gomar, when he finishes all of the Hazos, then Mekaneach Yodoi Begufashol Pora. He wipes his hand on the body of the Pora in order to get the blood off, as Rashi points out that the blood must also be part of the burning of the carcass of the Pora Duma. Lo Gomar, however, if he hasn't finished all of the Hazos, there still is a wiping, mekaneach etzbo. He wipes his finger, because the shirayim shebe'etzba are not suitable for the next sprinkling, the subsequent sprinkling. So between each sprinkling of blood, there must be a wiping of the finger. Bishlamo gomar, I understand the case where he finishes all of Azos, mekaneach yoda begufin shopora. He wipes his hand on the body of the pora. As we mentioned, even the blood needs to be burnt. Any remaining blood after the sprinklings needs to be burnt. Shinemar, the pasuk says, Visorav es ha-pora li'enov. The pora is to be burnt, and Rashi points out that the pora means, and based on the pasuk itself, which says, es oirov es besorav es domo al pirsho yisrof, that everything is burnt. Elo etzbo b'may mekaneach. How does he wipe his finger in between each hazor? Rashi points out one option that we rule out is the wiping of the finger on the body of the pora, because that would that would get the finger dirty with cow hairs. And between each, after any given hazor, he's going to be doing a subsequent hazor. He's not going to want to do that with cow hairs on his finger. So the question is, what does he use in order to wipe off the finger? Between hazors, Omar Abaye, Bisfas Mizrok. He wipes his finger on the edge of the vessel that was used for receiving the blood. Kidichtiv, Kipurei Zahav. The Pasuk in Ezra refers to these vessels that were used for, that were used as service vessels, using the word Kipurei Zahav. Rashi points out those were the Mizrokin, the service vessels used for receiving the blood. The word Kipurei is associated with cleansing. So we see from the name of the kli that one of the uses of the kli was for cleansing, and more specifically for wiping the finger free of the blood, the shirayim sheba etzba. Mishnah. Nitaz al ha'or. Blood from the sacrifice splattered on the animal's skin. Ad shelo hufshor eino tohen kibus. Prior to this animal being skinned, that kind of sacrificial blood that lands on the skin while attached to the animal does not necessitate kibus. Mishehufshot, from the point that the animal is skinned, so that you, in effect you have just skin right now, and blood from sacrificial blood that's worthy of being sprinkled splatters on the skins of the animal after it's been skinned. Ton kibus divrei Rabbi Yehuda. On this second point of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar will disagree. Rabbi Elazar Omer, af mi shehufshot eino ton kibus. Animal skins after the animal has been skinned also does not necessitate a need for kibus. If we glance at Rashi, this is a point that will be featured in the Gemara later on, but we can look at the Rashi now for introductory purposes. Rashi, at the beginning of the Mishnah, says, Ad shelo hufshot ein ton kibus. Time of Meforesh B'Gemara, the Gemara will explain why the skin still on the animal prior to its being skinned does not necessitate kibus. Deboinon roi l'kabel tumo. We need the, in order for there to be a kibus obligation, the blood has to land on something that's fit for absorbing tumo. Below chisor melocha, without any further melocha needs, any further actions that are necessary. Therefore, since the skin on the animal's back is missing in action, namely the skinning itself, it is something that's not mekabel tumah, and hence doesn't obligate the skin to be washed. The next Rashi, af mishehufshet, this was explaining Rabbi Elazar, that says even skins that are removed from the animal, if blood of the sacrifice lands on it, there is no kibus need. Rashi says, "Kol zman shelo niskan lios kli, as long as the skin has not been fashioned into a vessel, into some kind of useful item, ein ton kibus." So that at the point that it's merely skinned, it hasn't been fashioned into a vessel yet. Therefore, there's no kibus requirement. Deboino dover hamekabel tumo. We need, in order for there to be a kibus obligation, that the blood lands on something that is currently able to receive absorb tumo. Shein mechusra filu machshava, where the item is completely useful, not lacking even any planning. This will be understood a little more clearly as we go into the Gemara later on. The Mishnah goes on, Eino ton kibus elo mokoim hadam. Not the whole beged, only where the spot that the blood landed. V'davar shehu roi l'kabel tuma. And there's no requirement of kibus unless you're dealing with something that's fit for being mekabel tuma. This would fit in with the first sheet in the Mishnah, Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, and Rashi points this out. Something that's fit for being mekabel tuma, even though it's right now, he hasn't planned right now to use it as it is. It's sufficient that it's not lacking any actual action. In other words, you have something that if he were to decide to use it as it is, it would be useful without any further action to the skin. So if it's something that's roi l'kabel tumah, then it does require kibbutz. And number three, veroi lekibbutz, something fit for kibbutz, as opposed to, well, the Gemara will explain later on, as opposed to items that are not rinsed but rather scraped off. Echod habeged veechod hasak veechod haor teunin kibbutz. Any of these different kind of materials will necessitate kibbutz if dam of sacrificial blood lands on them. Hakibbutz b'mokom kadosh. The Mishnah, you can see we've used a double underline. Each time you'll see the expression mokom kadosh appearing. There are several halachas that it is necessary to do these actions, procedures, in the Azorah. Mokum Kodesh is a reference to the Azorah. So the first halacha is that kibbutz, which has been the topic we've been discussing, must be done in the Azorah. Ushviras klicheres b'mokum Kodesh. This is a case where a vessel was used for cooking up a mechatas, and we're talking about a pottery that was used for cooking up chatos, sin offering meat. That must be, when you finish the cooking, so the kli cheres is to be smashed b'mokum kodesh in the Azorah. And number three, umriko shtifa b'kli nechoshes, the din of rinsing out a vessel when you're dealing with copperware as opposed to the earthenware, that too, the umriko shtifa must be b'mokum kodesh. Ze choymer b'chatos mikotshe kotshim. Regarding the halacha of kibbutz, kibbutz, according to the Mishnah, is something that is necessary only with regard to a sin offering as opposed to other high-level sanctity sacrifices. Mino hanimili detonu rabbonon. From where do we know that which was taught in the Mishnah? So we have a Tanaic source that continues to the fourth line from the top of the next Omid. The Pasuk mentions beged, that if blood of a sacrificial blood splatters onto a beged. We saw this in Vayikra Vav, Pasuk Chof, and we had this Pasuk previously on Daf Tzadi Beis. We quoted this Pasuk where it said, Asher Yizeh Midomo Al HaBeged, Asher Yizeh Olea Techabes Memokom Kodosh. So the pasuk features a beged. Beged is an article of clothing made from fabric. So from that I know only that kind of garment requires the kibbutz, mi'ayin the rabos or mishuvshat. From where do I know to include that even skins of animals, once the animal has been skinned, the skin itself also, if blood that's roi lahazah falls on it, the skin must be washed. So where do I know or from? Tamad lomar asher yizeh oleo techabes. Yochol shani marbe or ad shelo hufshet. Should I include even unskinned skins while still attached to the animal, if they get soiled with this sacrificial blood, that it would require kibbutz? Tavod lomar beged. Ma beged haroi l'kabel tumo, af kol haroi l'kabel tumo. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. The Torah uses the word beged, and just like a beged is roi l'kabel tumo, it's something that's fit to receive ritual impurity, so too anything that is fit to receive ritual impurity, as opposed to skins that are still on the animal. Skins only once they've been removed a roi l'kabel tumo. This is Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, who mentioned that roi l'kabel tumo is sufficient for obligating kibbutz. Rabbi Elazar Omer, beged. Ein li'ela beged. Minayin l'rabois sak v'chol minei begodim. Rabbi Elazar asks, from where do I know to include garments that are made from something other than standard beged? Standard beged material is wool and linen and flax. How about sackcloth? From where do I know to include sackcloth? Sackcloth is made from the hairs of goats. and v'chol minei begodim, and other kinds of garments, let's say made from silks or other types of strands. Talmud lomar asher oleho techabes. Should I include even leather, even skins of animals, once they have been simply skinned? Tamalomar beged. So Rebbe Elazar says, no, I'm not going to include or mishuhufshav as also being obligated in kibbutz, because the word beged is used by the Torah. Ma beged dovar mekabel tuma, av kol dovar mekabel tuma. Just like a beged is something that is currently fit to receive tuma, without anything further, without any future, without any planning, so too any other item must have that characteristic, as opposed to the case of or mishahufshat. The Gemara itself, in our next shiur, will discuss what are the points of difference between, let's say, points, practical points of difference, or examples that are different between Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Elazar. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.